Okay, good morning. We welcome to the Daf HaShavua, weekly share in Masech Sota, sponsored by David and Paula Bamzer and Omo Construction, Building Futures, and Breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Nishmas Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim, and Zev Ben David, and Sarah Bas Shalom, and Chaim Ben Yoshua, and Idol Ben Bas Moshe Yosef. We're doing Sota Daf Chaf Aleph. Today we're going to start at the two dots towards the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis, where it says Yesh La Zuchus, and it's quoting from the Mishnah on the previous Amud, which we covered last week, where the Mishnah said that the effects of the Mei Sota, of the woman who is accused of adultery drinking the waters, are not necessarily going to be immediate. In fact, if a woman has Zuchuyos, if she has certain merits that we're going to get into, the Mishnah says, then the effect can be delayed for a certain amount of time. That's what the Mishnah had said. It could delay the effects by a year, by 2 years, by 3 years, and that's what the Mishnah said. So in the Beis Hamikdash, you wouldn't necessarily see the effects right away. It might be delayed by a year or two or three. Now we're going to get into a little detail on that. So the Gemara says, at the two dots, we're about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 lines from the bottom. Mani mas nisen. Who is our Mishnah going like? Lo Abba Yossi ben Chanan. It can't be Rabbi Yossi ben Chanan, who's the author of our Mishnah, or who it's going like. V'lo Rav Elazar ben Yitzchak, Ish Kfar Drom. V'lo Rabbi Shmuel. It can't be like any of these three Tanaim, and we'll see why. D'tanya, we have a brace that says, "Im yesh la zuchus tole la shlosha chadashim." So there's a brace that says that a zuchus can delay the effects of the mei sota by up to 3 months. Kedei hakara saubar, and how do you get to the number 3 months? That's how long it takes for a woman to be showing when she's pregnant. Divrei Abba Yossi ben Chanan. So he ties it to how long it is until a woman's showing. Rav Elazar ben Yitzchak ish kfar darom omer teisha chadashim. He says it can be delayed up to 9 months. Shnemar v'naksa v'nizra zera. The pasuk says here by the sota. On the flip side of this, if it turns out that the sota, the woman who had been accused of being unfaithful, was not actually unfaithful, the pasuk says that she gets a bracha, right? The pasuk says, "V'imlo nitma ha'isha u'tahorahi." If in fact she had not sinned, then she was tahor. So then, v'niksa v'nizra azera, that she gets a bracha, she's going to have children. She's going to have children, and so since the pasuk says v'niksa v'nizra azera as the flip side of what would happen if the mesota had their negative effects on her. So Rav Elazar ben Yitzchak says you're going to look at how long a typical pregnancy is. A typical pregnancy is 9 months. And so therefore, if in fact she merited for the effects of the mesota to be delayed, it would kind of correspond to that amount of time. It would be nine-month delay. So again, the pasuk says v'naksa v'nizra zera u'alan u'momer zera yavdenu yusupar. That's what the pasuk says in Tehillim. Yusupar zera haroi haroi lisaper. Again, he's working off the fact that a typical pregnancy is 9 months, mm-hmm. And so therefore, since this pasuk refers to zera, which is a pregnancy, it's talking about the typical length of a pregnancy. That's the amount of time that it would be delayed.
That's a quick question.
Yeah,
I've heard I know early in the Gemara, we learned that the procedure she is found guilty that it causes her death and it's whatever. And I've heard some more Gemaran commentaries talking about that, really what it is, it's a more violent miscarriage. And this would seem, especially in the 3 months, and this whole conversation would almost seem to support that a little bit more. Like, maybe a miscarriage that causes her death, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that the focus is really on the puzzle. It's really more of like a miscarriage, what would happen with her belly and so on. Does that make sense here? Could you read it that way or not?
I guess so. We're looking at kind of the flip side, right? Which is what happens if there's no effect, meaning if it doesn't cause her stomach to explode, if it doesn't cause this marriage. Which one? The Tola Shalosh HaKadashim?
The fact that it could be like a 3-month delay before she has.
Oh, I see what you're saying, that it's going to delay. If she was unfaithful now, we're going to wait for it to kick in until there's been a development of the Uber.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
What aspect does that have to do with the fetus, though?
What Mitch is saying is that this punishment is kind of tied to a miscarriage.
For 3 weeks, it's not no real.
Not right. It's not as messy. Right.
Exactly. The Uber's already starting to show some development around that third month.
Right. I don't know. I mean, the Mishnah is phrasing this in the context of im yesh lo zechus, that this is a good thing, that this is somehow going to... So I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know how you'd work that into this idea. Okay, fine. So that was the second. So again, we had the 3-month delay. We have the 9-month delay. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Shnei Masar Chodesh. It's a year delay. That gets past the Mishnah issue here, right? Because you get a year delay. Year delay. Rabbi Shmuel is going to bring. He says, "Alpha Pishen Raya Ladavra." I don't have a proof for the fact that it's a year, meaning I don't have as direct a limud from the Pesukim, but Zecher Ladavra. I have a allusion to this idea. Dechsev, and he quotes a pasuk from Daniel, where it's talking about a situation where Daniel had just interpreted a dream for Nebuchadnezzar, and he was telling Nebuchadnezzar how to kind of rehabilitate himself and get him out of the possibility of punishment. And he says, Lahain Malka Milki Yishbar, Alach Yishbar Alach, V'chatach Bitstaka, Pruk Vav Yasach, B'michan Einan, Hein Teve Arka, V'shalva Seich. He says the way that you can kind of redeem yourself and redeem the chataim that you've done is by giving tzedakah and by helping out, by doing chassadim. And by doing that, hein teve arvekach l'shloseich, as Rashi says at the top, azte orech zman l'shlomeich, there you're going to prolong your punishment, you're going to prolong your years, shelo yavo alayach ha-peranius, and the peranius, the terrible decrees that have been decreed upon you that I just interpreted in this dream, are going to be delayed and not cause not happen right away. Rashi continues and says that Nebuchadnezzar followed Daniel's advice, and he would gather together all the Aniya Yisrael, all the poor people in Yisrael, and he gave them mizonos and he supported them, and it all worked out. And then what happened? V'chsiv kolo, this is the very next pasuk, kolo meta al Nebuchadnezzar malka, that the bad stuff that had been predicted to happen to Nebuchadnezzar didn't happen. And then it says, this is the very next pasuk after that, Lekitsas Yarchin Shreyasar, for 12 months. Meaning by following Daniel's advice and giving out stuck and giving out food to the poor people, he succeeded in delaying the bad decree by 12 months. And so Rabbi Shmuel, who's quoting this, says, I don't have a proof directly for the Sota, but I have this kind of precedent in Tanakh that if you do good things and if you have a zuchus, it delays bad things, it delays the punishment by 12 months. And then that's his proof. So the Gemara said that we got into this by saying, look, our Mishnah said that you delay it by a year or 2 years or 3 years. And so that seems to not fit into any of these Tanaim, which had said 3 months or 9 months or a year. That doesn't correspond to what our Mishnah had said. So the Gemara answers, and so we have a problem because we're trying to figure out who is the author of our Mishnah. It doesn't seem to match up with any of the known perspectives, the known opinions on how long the punishment would be delayed. The Gemara answers, "Olam Rabbi Shmuel." Really, it's following the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel, who had said 1 year. And I say, how then do you explain the fact that our Mishnah prolonged it by a year, 2 years, or 3 years? The Ashkach Kra, the Amar, the Tani. And Rabbi Shmuel found another pasuk that was the basis for our Mishnah saying up to 3 years. Dichsiv Koamar Hashem al Shlosha Pishei Edom. This is a pasuk in Amos which talks about delaying things by up to three times. So if the basic delay for Zechuyos is 1 year, and then this pasuk in Amos says that you could kind of triple it, that's how you get to up to 3 years. Fine, that's the proof for Rabbi Shmuel. But if you remember, the Gemara had said this wasn't really a proof for Rabbi Shmuel as much as a precedent, something that was an allusion to it. He says, right, Afal Pishein Raya Odover Zecher Odover, I don't have proof. So the Gemara says, my Afal Pishein Raya Odover, why did he hedge and say, I don't have a proof for this from the Pasuk, and just the Zecher Odover? So the Gemara answers, Dilma Shaini Ovdei Kolchavim Dilomaf Gedina Alayu. Maybe when it comes to non-Jews, Nebuchadnezzar, his punishment was delayed by 12 months, and we could triple it based on the Pasuk and Amos to three years. Maybe that's because he was a non-Jewish, non-Jew. And when it comes to non-Jews, maybe Hashem doesn't come down quite as hard on them and delays and gives them a little more leeway in Olam Hazeh, in order, as opposed to Jews, where Hashem is going to come down a little harder on us. Rashi says, "Memarin lipara ba'olam hazeh mudaktin achareyam." Right? There are other gemaras that talk about the fact that when it comes to tzaddikim, perhaps when it comes to Jews, so things are harsher in this world because we're going to store up our merits, our zikuyos for olam haba. So maybe that's a similar idea here. And when it comes to non-Jews, the Nebuchadnezzar, maybe he had up to three years. But when it came to Jews, it would be a shorter amount of time. So therefore, the pasuk by Nebuchadnezzar is not necessarily a precedent that would work for the Sota, and that's why Rabbi Shmuel hedged and said, I don't really have a full-blown proof, just a Zecher Ladavar. Fine, but that's the bottom line, is that our Mishnah said, and it seems to be fitting within Shitas Rabbi Shmuel, that if the woman has merits, her punishment, the effects of the Mesota might be delayed for up to 3 years. And the Gemara then continues and says, again, quoting, V'yesh Zuchus Tola Gimel Shanim, Zuchus Demai. What kind of zuchus are we talking about? What might a woman have done that would merit her punishment being delayed by up to 3 years? So Gemara is trying to figure that out. Ilema zuchus de Torah. If it's the fact that she was a talmidah chachama, she learned a lot of Torah, and that's what delayed her punishment. Ha'ina mitzuva v'osahi. But we know that women are not mitzuva v'osa, meaning women do not have the same level of obligation, or they don't have an obligation to learn Torah as a man does. And if that's the case, it's hard for us to really understand why that would be her real go-to zechus to learn Torah, because she's not mitzuva v'osa. We know generally, as a rule, gadol ha-mitzuva v'osa mimi she'enu mitzuva osa. Someone who's commanded to do a mitzvah and does the mitzvah merits more than someone who is not commanded to do the mitzvah. So the Gemara is not so thrilled with the suggestion that maybe it's the zechus of lima Torah that helped this woman. Ela zechus de mitzvah, maybe it's the zechus of mitzvah. Women might not be obligated to do Talmud Torah, but they are obligated in many mitzvos. They're obligated in all the losases. They're pater from mitzvah seisha as mangrama, but they're obligated in mitzvah saseh shaloh azman grama. So maybe it's the zechus of the mitzvah or mitzvos that this woman did. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, zechus de mitzvah mi magna kulei hai, a zechus of a mitzvah doesn't really help that much. Because of the following, v'atanya, don't we have a braisa that says, as zu darash Rabbi Menachem bar Yosi, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. The pasuk in Mishlei says that a mitzvah is like a candle, and Torah is like a fire. Tala hakasuv es a mitzvah b'ner. It seems to say that, equate a mitzvah with a candle. V'es a Torah b'or, and Torah is like fire. Es mitzvah lent b'ner. It says that a mitzvah is like a candle. Lo maruchah maner ena magina el lefisha. Af mitzvah ena magina el lefisha. A candle is just a simple candle that's going to burn down and eventually run out of fuel. And so therefore, a candle really only illuminates or protects for the amount of time that it has fuel in the candle. It's just a temporary salve. It's just a temporary fix. V'asat Torah b'or, But the Torah is likened to or. Maybe or is referring to a big cauldron, or maybe or is even referring to the or,
sun,
the sun, or maybe even the or agonos letzadikim. There are lots of different levels of or when we talk about or, about light. And that's always there, right? The sun's always there. Certainly the or agonos letzadikim is always there. Lomar ocha ma'or magin li'olam, just like or is always there. Af Torah magin li'olam. If you learn Torah, that has an everlasting zechus. Even after you finish learning Torah, even after we finish today's shir, the Torah, God willing, will help us for the rest of the day, for the rest of our lives. Torah has an everlasting zechus. And so the Gemara more readily was accepting the idea that if she learned Torah, that if someone learned Torah, that will have a protective effect and will protect from the punishment of the Mesota. That made a little more sense. But when you're talking about just the zechus of a mitzvah, that's harder to believe because the mitzvah's zechus is fleeting. It's just while you're doing the mitzvah that it has this protective element. And so therefore, we're kind of caught in a logjam. On the one hand, we want the Torah to be the thing that saves her. But on the other hand, a woman is not mitzvah in learning Torah. So what's going on? Just to continue that same brisa, af Torah magino leolam, Torah is everlasting. It has an everlasting effect of protection. V'omer, the pasuk says, v'salechecha tancha osach, b'salechecha tancha oscha ze olam hazeh, b'shachbecha tishmar alecha zumisa. So the pasuk says, v'salechecha tancha osach, b'shachbecha tishmar alecha, akitzos akikihises isecha. Talking about Torah, it says that it will protect you when you're walking. It'll also protect you when you are resting. And it'll also protect you kind of after that. So what's this talking about? That means that Torah will protect you in Olam Hazeh. Even when you're resting, it'll help you. Zumisa. It'll help you when you're dead. That'll help you even, Mashiach, after Tchias HaMesim. So, Mashal Adam Shayim Halich B'Ishon Laila. It's like a Mashal, like a person who is walking at night. It's very, very dark, and he's alone. Va'afela. It's pitch black. U'misyare min ha'kotzim. He's afraid of thorns. U'min ha'pachasim. He's afraid of ditches, Rashi says. And u'min ha'barkanim. He's afraid of thunder and lightning. Umichaya ra, he's afraid of getting eaten by a wild animal. Umin alistim, and he's afraid of robbers, armed bandits. Veino yodea beiza derech mahalich, and he's completely lost. This guy is in bad shape. It's dark. He doesn't know what he's going to do. Nizdam no lo avuka shor, and now all of a sudden he gets a torch of light. Nitzal min akotzim, umin apsachasim. So then the torch of light is going to help him somewhat because it's going to help him from thorns. He's not going to walk into thorn bushes now. Umin ha'pachasim, he's not going to walk into a ditch. He's not going to fall into a ditch because he sees where he is. Umin ha'barkanim, and I thought barkanim was thunder and lightning, but it must be something else. What's barkanim? Thistles. Okay, fine. Thistles and thorns. That sounds like the same thing to me, but okay. And so fine. So it only helps him somewhat because v'adayin misyare mechayara. The torch might help him see his way, but it's not going to help him from a really wild animal. The torch is not going to do the trick. Umin alistim, and if he's attacked by armed bandits, the torch is not going to help him with that either. Not only that, ve'inu yodea be'ezah derech mahalich. The torch is not a map. The torch is not going to. It's not a GPS system. It's not going to help him find his way. However, so the torch is a partial salvation. Kevan shalom rashachar. Now, when the sun rises. So then now at least he's less worried about wild animals because wild animals are more likely to attack him at night. Umin alistim, he's less likely to be attacked by bandits now. However, v'adayin ene yodea be'izo derech mahalich, he still doesn't have a GPS, and so even now the sun is risen, he's still completely lost. He gil aparshas drachim nitzol mikulam. But when he comes to an intersection, a place where it's all of a sudden there are signs and where it's clear where he's going, so then he realizes what's going on. So Rashi explains the nimshel here. So too, when it comes to the merits of of Torah, of mitzvos and Torah, etc. So those are going to help him some way, but he doesn't ever really know if he's going to go back. Meaning he might have the merits of Torah to help him, and that's going to help him significantly. But as long as he's alive, it's possible he's still at risk. At any moment, we're at risk of doing chataim, of losing our Torah, of kind of going off the derech. And it's only at the end of a person's life, when he comes to the Yom HaMisa, Rashi says, that he's nitzel mikulan, because he knows that he kind of lived the life of Torah, he lived the life of mitzvos, and he's not going to go back. So it's only at the very end of the life, as of his life, that he is saved from all the elements, from all the things that might bother him. And so the same thing is true here. Only once he reaches the Parshas Drachim, he reaches the intersection where he knows where he's going, is he nitzel mikulan. Okay. Anyway, that was a long braisa just to explain this near mitzvah of the Torah. Main point was that mitzvah only has temporary salvation or temporary protection, whereas Torah has more limited salvation. The Gemara is just going to do a slightly different interpretation. Davar acher, avera mechaber mitzvah, vein avera mechaber Torah. So we said it in terms of the mitzvah protecting you, while you're doing the mitzvah and the Torah protecting you even after that. Here we're kind of flipping it and saying, when you do a mitzvah, you're still at risk of an avera undoing the mitzvah. I mean, you can do a mitzvah, but then you do an avera, that erases the zechus you did of the mitzvah. But when it comes to learning Torah, Torah is such a powerful, has such a powerful effect that in avera mechabet Torah, that an avera doesn't undo the benefit of Torah. Rashi says, for Misha Asak B'Torah Kodom Achein, the Torah kind of has an effect on you that it protects you even from an aver that you might do. Shenemar Mayim Rabim Yol Yuchu Chavos Esa'ava. This is a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, I believe, Shir HaShirim, where it says that all sorts of terrible stuff is not going to extinguish the love from learning Torah. Good. Amar of Yosef, Mitzvah Ba'idna da'asik ba magna umatzla. Again, pulling on this distinction between a mitzvah and Torah, so Rav Yosef says a mitzvah, when you're doing the mitzvah, it will protect you from yisurin, from bad stuff happening to you. Umatzla, and will also protect you from your yetzirah hara. Ba'idna da'lo asik ba, but when you finish doing the mitzvah, aguna magna, aguna magna, it will protect you from yisurin, meaning having done the mitzvah, that will be a protection against bad things happen to you. However, atzulei lo matzla, it will not stop your yetzer hara from continuing to have an effect on you. You might still end up turning and doing the wrong things. However, Torah, in contrast, bein ba'idna da'asikba, bein ba'idna da'asikba, whether you're in the middle of learning Torah or you finished learning Torah, Torah will have an everlasting impact, and it's magna umatzla. It will stop yisurin from happening to you. It'll protect you from yisurin, from bad things, from punishments. Umatzla, and it will also have an effect on your psyche, on your behavior, on your deportment. It'll stop your yetzer hara from having an effect on you, unlike mitzvah, which just protects yisurin from coming to you. Maskevor Rabba. So Rabba says, if that's true, that Torah is so powerful that it wards off the yetzer hara, and you won't do averos if you learn Torah. So we know that people who learn Torah sometimes do averos. And the most famous of those are El Me'ata, Doeg V'Achitofel. Doeg and Achitofel were both big Talmidei Chachamim, and yet they did averos, right? Doeg was the one who gave, who was Shaul's advisor, who told Shaul that Nov Ira Kohanim had helped David, and he incited Shaul. Again, Shaul got all upset, and he ended up killing off Nov Ira Kohanim. That's bad, bad stuff. And Doeg was a big Talmud Chacham, and yet he was kind of involved in inciting Shaul to kill out Nova Ira Kohanim. Achitofel was David's advisor, who was a big Talmud Chacham, and he defected to Avshalom. He helped out Avshalom with his rebellion, David's son. So here were big Talmud Chacham. They learned lots and lots of Torah, and yet the Yitzhar didn't quite work to keep the Yitzhar away from them. They somehow did bad stuff. Right, they learned lots of Torah, Amai lo higina alayu. And so why didn't the Torah, why didn't their Torah learning protect them from doing bad stuff? El Amar Rava. So Rava doesn't, we started with Rava, but the Girsa on the side changes to Rava. So it's Rava talking. So Rava is bothered by this idea that Torah necessarily protects you from doing bad. I mean, you could ask on lots of Talmidei Chachamim who, you know, end up doing Chataim to a greater or lesser extent. But meaning Torah is not an absolute salvation against doing bad things. So the Gemara answers, so Elamar Rava, so Rava is going to change the formulation slightly. Torah, ba idna da'asik ba magna umatzla. When you're learning Torah, so it keeps the Yisurin away, it protects you from Yisurin, from harm, umatzla, and it'll also keep the Yitzhar Hara away. It's rare for someone, while he's actually learning Torah, to do really bad stuff. While you're actually learning Torah, it'll keep your Yetzer Hara away. However, be'ina de'la'asik ba, when you close the Gemara, when you finish learning Torah, agune magna, it will continue to keep the Peranios away, the Yisurin away. However, atzule lo matzla, but it won't, it's not 100% salvation from you doing bad things. Your Yetzer Hara might still affect you. That's Torah. But mitzvah is in a lower level still. Mitzvah bein ba'idna da'asik ba, Bain Ba'idna Dulasikba, whether you're doing the mitzvah or not doing the mitzvah, meaning even after you finish the mitzvah, agune magna atsue lo matzla. When it comes to the mitzvah, even when you are doing it, it will protect you from Yisurin, bad things won't happen to you. However, still atsue lo matzla, your Yetzirah might still affect you. Meaning even while you're doing a mitzvah, the Yetzirah might still affect you. You might be tempted to do Averos. Whereas Torah, at least while you're doing Torah, it'll keep the Yetzer Hara away. You won't be tempted to do Averos. Arvina Amar Li Olam Zichus Torah. Okay, so 1 second. So all this was a very long way of saying, we don't understand what's the Zichus that's going to protect this poor woman and delay the effects of the Mesota by a year or two or three. It can't be Torah because she's not Mitzuvah in Torah. A woman is not obligated to learn Torah. And it can't be mitzvah because we just got finished saying that mitzvahs don't really have such a protective long-term effect. So what is it that's helping push off the effects of the mesota on this woman? So Ravina Amar.
Why can't even though she doesn't get the mitzvah, for Torah, even though she's not obligated, she still can't get the merit of delaying the punishment?
So that's...
Even though she's not mitzvah, she still can't get the rewards?
Yes, that's what Ravina is going to say. I mean, the Gemara had started off by kind of being very sure of itself by saying, if she's not Mitzuvah Vosa, there's nothing to talk about when it comes to Torah. But now we're gonna soften that position a little, walk away from that. Ravina Amar, we owe them Zuchus Torah. Really, the Zuchus Torah is what's going to help her. Udika Amris, which is interesting, because the Gemara seems to be advocating here for Talmud Torah for a woman on some level, because that's what's going to help her, right? Udika Amris, Eina Mitzuvah Vosa. And even though we said that she's not obligated to learn Torah, nehi de pekudo lo mifka, even though nehi de pekudo lo mifkada ba'agra de makar namastim ben. Okay, so one second. So even though it's true that women are not themselves mitzuvah and Talmud Torah, nehi de pekudo lo mifkada, they are not themselves personally obligated. Nevertheless, ba'agra, with the schar, with the reward of the makrin umasnim banayhu, the fact that they teach Torah to their sons, help them with their homework, minatrinu gavrayu, and they wait for their husbands to come home late at night when they're learning Torah, adasu mi bemidrasha, for them to come home from the base medrash, milo palgon badayu. So it must be that they split the schar. They get a portion of the schar of their sons and husbands learning. So it's true. The Gemara is kind of sticking with that story of saying that if they're not mitzuvah, then the merit's not going to rise to the level where it's going to protect them from the mesota and delay the punishment by a year or two or three. But at least they are participants in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah of the men in their lives, their sons and their husbands. And that's what the zuchus is. That's tola, and that delays the mesota. It's a good question. Why is the Gemara so sure that you need mitzvah of Talmud, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah at its highest level in order to get this zechus. I assume the Gemara is just working with the idea that you need zechus at a high level in order to delay the effects of the meisota, and that's why it falls ultimately to this answer of the sons and the husbands.
There's
and
a
husbands.
Lot of stuff that women are obligated to learn.
There's a lot of stuff that. So let's just look. Yeah.
Kashrus, and aren't they responsible for learning, teaching children to a certain age?
Well, okay, so teaching children, that we cover in our Gemara. So it's worth just pausing and looking in the Shulchan Aruch when it comes to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah for Yishuv. Let me just read this. The Yordam, Reishma, and Vav, the Mechaber mostly tracks the Rambam, the Lashon of the Rambam. Isha Shalom de Torah, Ishla Schar. A woman who earns Torah gets Schar. It's not quite like the schar of a man, because she's not obligated to do it. So gadol mitzuvavosa mishenu mitzuvavosa. V'af b'sheishla schar. Now here's we're gonna. I'm jumping ahead, but let's just do it here now. V'af b'sheishla schar. Sheishla schar. Even though she has schar, nevertheless, this is the mechaber talking. Tzavu chazal shlo yulamid adam es bito Torah. A person is not supposed to teach his daughter Torah. Because women are not really open to it. Most women are not oriented in that direction. And they're going to end up belittling the Torah because they don't have very open minds. Now keep in mind, the Mechaber is writing this, the Gemara was writing this at a time when that was the real reality. Women were illiterate across the board, and they wouldn't typically learn Torah.
Save.
Clearly, that yeah. circumstance has changed nowadays.
You can save tuition.
Yeah, that's true. So, and therefore, Amru Chachamim, we're going to see in our Gemara, and we already saw it in the Mishnah, Kol Melamin is Bito Torah Ki'u Melamedes Melam de Tiflis. It's as if you taught her like promiscuity. However, here's an important caveat the Rambam throws in and the Mechaber quotes. That's only true about Torah Shebal Peh. About Torah Shebichsav lo yulamid osal lechatchila. Even though you shouldn't learn teach your Torah Shebichsav lechatchila, in melamedes eino kamelamedes tiflis, it's not so terrible to teach your daughter Torah Shebichsav. Then the Ramah throws in the following based on the Ugur who's quoting the Smag. Umikol makom chayeves haisha lomo dinim hashayachem leisha. Women are obligated to learn the halachos that apply to them, which is many, many halachos. I mean, that's a wide swath of Torah applies to women. And then it goes into her obligation to teach her son. Maybe she's not, maybe she is. But it's a good thing for her to do it, as we saw in our Gemara. That's the bottom line in terms of halacha
and maisa. It seems like the merit that Rabba and Rava were talking about wasn't necessarily a merit of while learning Torah, you have like this mindset of not avoiding Avera. It's really just a supernatural protection, because if it was an awareness, then the women would have that same awareness if they're learning Torah. But because it's a meritorious type of approach, there must be some type of supernatural protection.
Yeah, okay.
Not a mindset by learning Torah.
Not a mindset. I mean, the mindset would apply only while they're learning.
Maybe, Torah, then you have this mindset, and then therefore it protects you farther away when you're not learning Torah.
Like, right.
It can't be a mindset, because why wouldn't the woman have that same mindset if they're learning Torah? So it must be some type of supernatural protection that you have.
Right, that derives from the fact that she's mitzvah, that a man is mitzvah vios, that doesn't apply to a woman, yeah.
When you learn Torah, you go out with your day with that mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. That's good.
Also, you know, I can understand when it says, you know, that they have merits for sending their sons learning Torah. But it's a little problem when she's sending her husband to learn Torah, because at that time she might be running around, and you know, it's canceling one another.
Okay. All right. There's a lot to be said about the mitzvah of women in Talmud Torah. There's a lot to be said about the mitzvah of women in Talmud Torah. The bottom line is, as a matter of practical halacha, that Ramah is kind of controlling, and so it kind of opens the door to learning all sorts of halachas that apply to her. And of course, the sociology of this has changed. The Rav Soloveitchik is famous for having begun or insisted upon or suggested encouraging women to learn Torah Shebal Peh even nowadays, because women are learning all sorts of things. There's kind of society has changed significantly. And if you were to say that women shouldn't learn Torah Shebal Peh, you're going to cut them off from the beauty of Torah. It's going to end up, you know, that's the Rav in Torah Shebal Peh. The Chafetz Chaim earlier than that had kind of opened the door to right to the Beis Yaakov movement, etc. So there's the advance of modernity has obviously changed the calculus in a lot of these discussions and made it practically speaking so that Torah should be taught to women just like men.
For the Rav, the other part, when his decision was that he felt like the whole world of Dimanut. He said, like, I learned from my mother, I learned from my grandmother. It was eroding very much in America.
Right.
That was the other rationale for why it was
important. Why you have to turn to the books, right. Yeah, yeah. So, okay. But it is true. I mean, we have to be honest. When it comes down to it, fundamentally, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah as a mitzvah, as a formal mitzvah, is something that's mitzvah for a man, not a woman. But in terms of the practical openness of women to learning Torah, that a lot of that is affected by the reality of the situation. By, first of all, what the Ramah quotes from the Ugur, that women have to know how to do things, and so therefore it makes perfect sense rationally for them to learn Talmud Torah. And then the reality of the fact that they have all sorts of other opportunities now, and you wouldn't want to cut off the beauty of Torah from them as well. Okay. Mari Parshas Drachim. So we said above, Rashi had kind of gotten into a little bit, that at the end of his life, he's in a really good position because he knows that he's not going to turn back. So it turns out, if it turns out that he's done mitzvahs and learned Torah his whole life, so now at a Parshas Drachim, he's in great shape. Amar of Chista, Zeh Tam Chacham V'Yom Misa, as we just said. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar, Zeh Tam Chacham V'Yira Schait. Zeh Tam Chacham V'Yira Schait. Meaning if it's not just that you learn Torah, but that you're Zocha to a level of Yira Schait, where you've allowed the Torah to elevate you, and you're really afraid of Chait, you have a yiras shemaim in a way that you don't want to do averos. So that's what it means, parshas drachim. You reached a higher level, and it's going to keep you from doing averos. Mar zutra amar zeh tam chacham, the salkalei shmeitza, aliba de halacha, aliba de hilchasa. This is referring to a tam chacham who has reached the point of learning Torah in a way that's aliba de hilchasa, in a way that's actually... That's actually practiced. So Rashi explains that what this is referring to is im yizkesh yisayu min hashemayim yiskabel dvar ben chaver v'horiz chalach ha-mishpat higil parashas drachim komer zachal l'chach nitzum u'kum. It's a point where he's learning halachos on such a level that his friends and the people around him listen to what he says and they follow his hachra on issues of halacha. And that's kind of a high level that where you can be assured that your Torah learning is going to keep you from chet. Fine. Dover acher, avira mechaba mitzvah. Again, back to this idea of the difference between mitzvah and Torah. So we said, dover acher, avira mechaba mitzvah, vein avira mechaba Torah. That an avira might quash the effects of a mitzvah. If you do a mitzvah and then an avera, so avera will kind of override the fact that you did a mitzvah, then avera mechabe Torah. But when you do Torah, Torah is on such a higher level, such a high level that even a later avera will not offset the benefits of that Torah learning. Amar Rav Yosef, Darshe Rav Menachem Bar Yossi LaHaikra, Rav Menachem Bar Yossi, he darshan this pasuk of Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Ki Sinai, as if he had learned it directly from Sinai, meaning he was so enamored with Rav Menachem Bar Yossi's drasha on the pasuk of Ner Mitzvah, Ki Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or, that it's as if he had heard it directly from Sinai. Vil Mole Darshua Doeg V'Achitofel Hachi L'Rodfu Basar David. And if only Doeg and Achitofel had learned the pasuk with this clarity, they wouldn't have ended up causing problems for David. They wouldn't have done the chataim that they're accused of doing. Tichsiv, Lemor, Elokim, Ozvu. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. Lemor, Elokim, Ozvu, Ritfu, Tivsu, Kein, Matzil. Maidar. So the point is, what's this drasha that he was so enamored with? V'lo yira b'cha ervas davar. This is the pasuk in Devarim. You're not going to end up caught up in Dvar Mishabe Erva. I think he's just kind of reviewing back on the drush that we had said about Ner Mitzvah Torah, or the idea is that that mitzvah doesn't have quite the everlasting zuchus that Torah has, so that it will be quashed potentially by a later avera, whereas Torah will not. Okay, fine. So, my bozi avozulo, the end of the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, that we had quoted a pasuk that said, "Mayim rabim lo yuchu chabos es ava," that when you learn Torah, a later avera will not extinguish the Torah learning. It will not offset the merits of the Torah learning. And the pasuk ends, "Imitain ishes kohon be sobiava bozi avozulo," that he'll be condemned. So, what's this talking about, that he'll be condemned? Omar ula. Lo kishimon achi Azaria. Lo kishimon achi Azaria. This is not like Shimon achi Azaria. Lo karab Yochanan dbei Nesia. Ela kihilel v'shavna. So this is not talking about someone who. The pasuk had said. If a person gives up all his wealth for Torah learning, he's going to be condemned. That's what the pasuk in Shir HaShirim says, which is a puzzling statement, right? If he gives up all his wealth for Torah learning, biava boz yavo zulo, he's going to be condemned. So what the Gemara is saying, what's this talking about? And so it says, it's excluding Shimon ben Achi Azariah and Rav Yochanan ben Nesia. Shimon Achi Azariah is famous for having, the reason he's called Shimon Achi Azariah is because Azariah supported him in his Torah learning, and therefore whenever he's quoted in the Gemara, or in the Mishnah, he's referred to not just as Shimon, but as Shimon, the brother of Azariah, because his brother Azariah supported his Torah learning. So there was like a Yisachar Zvulun relationship, his brother supported his learning. And so this condemnation that the Pasuk has for someone who pays money to support Torah learning, it's not talking about Shimon and Achi Azariah. That's a great model for how you should be supported by Torah learning. And similarly, Lo Krab Yochanan Debei Nesia, who was supported in his Torah learning, that's a great model. Rather, El Kehillel Vishavna. It's like Hillel and Shavna. Dechi Asa Rav Dimi, because when Rav Dimi came, Amar, Hillel Vishavna Achi, Hillel Vishavna Achi. Hillel had a brother named Shavna. Havu Hillel Asak B'Torah. I'm sorry. Hillel v'Shavna Achi Havu. They were brothers. Hillel Asak B'Torah. Hillel learned Torah. Shavna Avad Iska. And Shavna, he was a businessman. He worked. Lesof, and at the end, meaning after Hillel had devoted himself to Torah and learned Torah all these years, after all that happened, Lesof Amrlei, Ta Narov Viliflog. After that, his brother, after Hillel had devoted all these years of learning Torah without any support from his brother Shavna approached him and he said, "Let's make a deal. You are such a big Talmud Chacham. You have so much Torah under your belt. I have so much money. Let me give some of my wealth to you and we'll make a deal and I'll get some of the schar for your learning. You'll have wealth now." Now, if you remember, we know that Hillel, during the time that he was learning, he was not wealthy at all. There's the famous story in Yuma where he couldn't even pay the entrance fee for the Beis Medrash. He had to go up, and the snow came on him. Right, so Hillel was a man who lived in destitute poverty. He had no money. So for all those years that Hillel was learning, his brother Shavna was happily doing his business on the side and wasn't supporting Hillel. And it was only at the end, afterwards, that he approached Hillel and offered him this Yisachar Zvulun deal. And therefore, Yatzasa Bas Kol V'Amra Imitain Ishes Kohon Beso, if a person, so a Bas Kol came out and says, a person who devotes his wealth to Torah, he's going to be condemned. That's referring to the situation like Shivna and Hillel, where all the years had gone by where Hillel had learned Torah without support, and now after the fact, post facto, Shavna approaches him and makes this offers him this arrangement, I'll pay you now for half your Torah learning. As opposed to the arrangement that Shimon Achi Azariah and Rabbi Yochanan Debei Nesia had entered into, where their brothers or their partners had supported them throughout their Torah learning and allowed them to learn Torah without fear of running out of money. That's the ideal model, and not this. Fine. I should just point out, we're running out of time, but I just wanted to mention that the Avkas Rochel, which is Rav Yosef Kairo, the Beis Yosef, has the Chelos of Jews Avkas Rochel. So he points out that the Yisachar Zvulun arrangement really only works if you're poor and you need money. For someone who's self-sufficient and learning Torah and doesn't need the money, so then he's not supposed to sell half his share. And he brings proof from that position from the Rashi here. If you look at the very bottom Rashi here, it says Hillel Asak B'Torah. Hillel, who is the Hillel Asak B'Torah Mitoch Uni Rav. It specifically says that Hillel was very, very poor. And so the Avkas Rochel kind of highlights that point in the Rashi here to say it's only someone who's very poor where a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement is appropriate, but not someone who would otherwise be able to get by. Okay, Omer ben Azai. This is back in the Mishnah. We said Ben Azai said Chayev Adam Wilma Lamed S. What did the Mishnah say? Mishnah said Mikan Omer ben Azai Chayev Adam Lamed S Bito Torah Shim Tishte Teidashe Zuchus Torah. So Ben Azai had said that actually you should teach your daughter Torah so that she knows that if she's ever in a sota situation and the May Sota don't have their immediate impact on her, she'll have learned this mission and know that, oh, it's possible Zuchus is what's at work, and that's why you should learn your daughter, teach your daughter Torah. And then Rav Elazar Omer Kol Melamed Es Bito Torah Melamed Es Tiflis. It's like teaching her promiscuity. So the Gemara says, Tiflos Salka Daitach, can you really say that teaching Torah is like teaching promiscuity? That sounds insane. Torah is the opposite of promiscuity. I'm sorry, it didn't say as if. It said, Kol Hamlamin is Bito Torah Muhammad is Tiflos. It's teaching her promiscuity. So the Gemara says, it's teaching her promiscuity. What do you mean? The Gemara answers, Ela Ima Kiulum Lumda Tiflos. It's as if you taught her promiscuity. It's as if you taught her promiscuity. And Rashi says, Shemitocha Himevina Armumius Beosa Dvara Behatsne, that as a result of this, it might lead her to be promiscuous, because she's going to kind of learn all the secrets of Sota and learn when the Sota applies, when the Sota doesn't apply. It's going to lead her to do bad stuff. Amar Rabbi Avo, my time with Rav Elazar. How does Rav Elazar know this? Tchsiv Ani Chachma Shachanti Arma, Kevin Shenichnasa Chachma Ba'adam Nichnasa Imo. Armumis, meaning the idea is that you're going to learn the tricks of the trade and you are going to learn how to kind of get around some of these rules. So that was Rav Elazar. Rabbanan hai ani chachma mai avdilei. What did the Rabbanan do with this pasuk? The Rabbanan didn't say that it's kiwum lamed mam de tiflis, that there's a problem teaching Torah. So what's this pasuk teaching? Mibayluch Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, Dar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, in Divrei Torah Miskayim Elo B'Misha Mamin Atzmo Arum Aleihem. That it's teaching you that you have to really push yourself to learn Torah, and in fact, you're not going to be successful in Torah learning unless you kind of take off everything and you just really, really devote yourself to Torah. That's what this pasuk is teaching us. Shenemar Ani Chachma Shachanti Arma. Amar Rav Yochanan in Divrei Torah Miskayim Elo B'Misha Misim Atzmo. That similarly, that you have to kind of humble yourself and make it as if you are nobody in order to learn Torah properly. You have to have the humility of asking questions, of really trying to understand Torah without bringing your own preconceived notions to Torah learning. You have to make it yourself like you're nobody. Okay. Rav Yoshua Omer Rotza Isha. So this is again a Mishnah. Our Mishnah kind of ended up with just these like small little quotes from various Tanaim. So we then quoted Rav Yoshua. It said, Rotza Isha Bekav Vitiflus Mitisha Kaben Uprishus. That a woman would rather have intimacy than wealth is basically what it's saying. You'd rather have intimacy than wealth. So, Maika Amar, what is it saying? Hachi kamar rotsa isha bekav v'tifus imo metisha kabin uprishus. A woman. The base. This is a very short saying that is referencing, as Tosfos points out here on the side, a much longer discussion in the Gemara Ksubos about the intervals that various professions have of intimacy with their wives. The Gemara in Ksubos talks about like a sailor, but who only come home once a month, and who only therefore have relations with his wife once a month. The Talmud Chacham has it once a week. Different professions devote themselves to the professions that's with different intensity, and as a result, the attention that they pay to their wife is different. And so the Gemara there is talking about what happens if a woman gets married, how much can she expect to be with her husband, and depending on different professions, she can expect different amounts. The Gemara there introduces the question, well, what if she marries a someone who is a like a camel driver, which has a certain level of intimacy, meaning at certain intervals, and then she wants to upgrade. She wants to, or he wants. He says, "I found a better job, and that better job is going to require me to be on more business trips and to be with you less often, or vice versa." And so the Gemara there is dealing with kind of how do you deal with these with introduction of these changes in a marriage. Who has the right to change? Does he have the right to change jobs to get more money, and he's going to be with her less often, or vice versa? And the Gemara concludes by saying, "Rotsa isha bekav v'tiflus imo mitisha kav v'neprishus." A woman would much rather have less sustenance, not live as lavish a lifestyle, but have a husband who's home and is able to provide for her in terms of intimacy, rather than living a lavish lifestyle because the husband's making more money and he's not going to be home as much and not going to be able to be with her as much. That's what the Gemara there in Ksuba says, and that's basically what Rabbi Yoshua is talking about here. And then finally, Huaya Omer Chasid Shota. So Rabbi Yoshua says that a Chasid Shota of Rasha Arum Isha Prusha Makos Prushim Hareu Mavle Olam. These people are like missing out on everything. They're not really experiencing life. And so the Gemara says, what's a chassid shota? Heichi dami chassid shota. What is a stupid chassid? Someone who's like overly religious. Kigon de katava isisa binara, where a woman is drowning in the river. V'amar lav orach aro istakueba. And he says, it's not appropriate for me to look at a woman, v'atsua, and to save her. It's not appropriate for me, and you know, as a result, she drowns. Tosfos here quotes a Yerushalmi who says, it's referring to someone who sees a baby who is drowning in the water, but he still has his tefillin on. So he says, oh, I have to take my tefillin off first before I jump in the water to save the baby. And in the meantime, the baby unfortunately dies. So that's another example of a chassid shota. You have to understand the hierarchy of responsibilities, of obligations. Sometimes you can jump in the water with your tefillin on. Sometimes you're allowed to look at a woman, such as if she's drowning, you have to save her. Then hechi dami rasha arum. What's a rasha arum? A naked rasha. Amar Rav Yochanan zehamatim dvarav ladayim kodem shiyavo bal din chavero. This is someone who tries to tell his story to the dayan before the other guy comes. Right? There's the pasuk says shamoa bein achichem. The dayan's responsibility when he hears a case is to do so in a fair manner, where each side hears the tainas of the other side and is able to rebut them. If someone has an ex parte conversation with a dayan before he gets to hear the case, so the dayan's not supposed to hear the case, the mefarshim here talk about how is this so terrible, because if you tell your story to the dayan before the other guy comes, before your adversary comes, this dayan's disqualified from hearing the case altogether. So the mefarshim talk about the fact that there are cases where even a dayan who's heard a story from one party is not necessarily disqualified, but it throws the balance of power off in the din Torah.
So maybe the word here, arum, is not naked. Maybe the word here is actually short for armumi.
Armumi, right.
He's
tricky.
It's a tricky.
Trickster, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that's...
Yeah. Rabbi Avolom, so anyways, that's one shot. Rabbi Avolom, this is referring to a situation where a poor person has less than Masayim Zuz. That's the threshold for when he would be able to collect the various matnas anim, leket, shikha, and peya, and maisrani, etc. So he falls under the threshold, and now you give him tzedakah to push him over the top, and now he's not able to collect all the things that he would be able to collect. So that's not a nice thing. That's not a nice thing. And Rashi points out what's going on here is you have relatives that you want to grab the matnos and aniyim, and so you want to kind of push this guy out of the category so he won't compete with your relatives. The Tanan, as the Mishnah says, Mishishlo Masayim Zuz, once you hit the threshold of Masayim Zuz, Lo Yito Leket Shichel Peo Maisrani, you're not eligible for these various takings, and so that's not a nice thing to do. Hayol Masayim Chaser Dinar, this is the continuation of the Mishnah, Hayol Masayim Chaser Dinar, even if you're just under the threshold, Afilo Elef Nosnin Lo Ka'achas, so if you're just under the threshold, and now I give you $1,000 as staka, you're still eligible to receive that $1,000, meaning you don't become ineligible at the same moment I give you the $1,000. Meaning once you're under the threshold, you can grab the matnas aniyim in one swoop and end up making a lot more money. But the point is that if you're just under the threshold and I give you a little money, I'm going to put you over the threshold and then I'm going to mess you over.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Aru means, just like what it said, ve'anachashaya aru mikol achaya, meaning
trickery.
He was trickery.
Trickery, yeah, it's exactly right. Ravasi Yomer of Yochanan ze'am meisi atzmo eitza lumkor b'nechasim mu'atim. This is someone who encourages a person to sell with nechasim mu'atim, to sell his stuff for under its value. And specifically in the following scenario, the Amar of Asi, Amar of Yochanan, Yisomim Shekadmu Umachru B'Nechasim Watim, Masha Machru Machru. That Yisomim, that, the way it works, as Rashi points out, if Yisomim that inherit money, they're supposed to support their money, their mother, right? One of the Tanaim in the Ksuba is that if a husband dies and leaves a widow and children, Yisomim, so the Yisomim are supposed to, they're supposed to manage the estate, and part of managing the estate is they have to feed the mother, the surviving wife, right? They have to provide sustenance for her.
Father's However, wife. Father's mother or the mother's mother?
No, the Yisomim's mother, the father's wife.
Their own mother.
Father dies and leaves a wife and children. So the children manage the estate and they have to feed their mother.
Their mother.
They have to provide sustenance to their mother. However, if it's very little money in the estate, so then they just give the lump sum to the mother and she's on her own. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. So this is referring to a situation where the Yisomim don't want to bother with feeding their mother and they just undersell the estate so that it's valued at a very little and then there's not much money in the estate and then they just give it to the mother. That's the scenario it's talking about according to Rashi. Abaye Yomer Zeh Meisi Atzim Umkar Ben Chasim Kar Ben Shimon and Gamliel. So this is a different scenario, says Abai. This is a talking about where someone owns a life estate with a remainder interest, to put it in legal terms. Someone owns, if I give you property and I say you own this property for the duration of your life, and then when you die, it goes to this other guy. And now you sell it. So that will extinguish the rights of the remainderman, of the guy who was entitled to it after you die. D'tanya nechasaucha v'acharecha l'poni, I give you property, and afterwards the other guy is going to get it. V'yar harishon u'machar, now the first guy sells it. V'yachal hasheni motzi midei l'kuchos divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says that the second guy who had the rights to receive it after the first guy dies, he has a lien on the property, and he could actually take it from the people who bought it. However, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer says, "English sheni al mashashir rishon." Actually, the sale by the first guy extinguishes the rights of the second guy. He doesn't have any recourse, and he's out. And so that's what Abai is saying. That first guy who sells the property, extinguishing the rights of the second guy. That's what this is referring to as being trickery. Rav Yosef Bar Chama Omer of Sheshes Zem Achriya Achirim Bar Chosav. Someone who says, "Oh, follow my ways." He acts haughtily and says, "I'm like the guy. You should follow what I do." But he's really not, Rashi says, ain't tochel kabaro, he's really a fakester, he doesn't really have good midos, and he's kind of just putting himself up as someone whose example you should follow when really he's not such a good guy. Rabbi Zrika Amar Rav Huna, it's a posek who is very makil on himself. He follows all the kulas, but whenever anyone comes to him for the shaila, he tells them all the chumras. Uwa says, Jeshakara Vishina Voshimesh Tamidei Chachamim. This is referring to someone who learns and teaches, but he doesn't follow Tamidei Chachamim. And he's a total book learner, but he doesn't hang out with Tamidei Chachamim, so he doesn't see how halacha actually works in real life, and he's going to lose out on some of the nuances because of that, if you learn it just from the books. I'll mention just very quickly, by the way, there's a story told that Ramir Shapiro, when he was fundraising for the yeshiva of the Chachmei Lublin, he was not meeting with success. He came to the United States, and he spent time in the United States, and he was completely dejected. He was just, because in America, there wasn't real great value for Torah learning, and so he was about to go home, kind of not having raised very much money. He was walking in Brooklyn, I think, and some guy came out of a shtiebel and said, we need two people for a minion. He was walking with someone else. He said, we need two people for a minion. Can you help us with the minion? So Meir Shapiro went into this minion. And the reason they needed it is because the shul president, it was his yahrzeit. Shul president was a guy by the name of Sam Jonas. He was a wealthy banker. Is that a famous name, Sam Jonas?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, what was he? He was a banker or something?
Yeah, he was in
finance. A wealthy philanthropist. Yeah. This is like 1920s or something. Mm-hmm. And it was he had yahrzeit and needed a minion. So they davened mincha. And then Sam Jonas asked Rav Meir Lublin, he didn't know who he was, he was just this rabbinic-looking guy, to say a few mishnayos between mincha marv. So Rav Meir Shapiro got up, and he realized that he hadn't yet done the daf yomi. If you're Meir Shapiro, you have to do the daf yomi. Right? He was the inventor of the daf yomi. So he figured, okay, during mincha marv, I'll start to do the daf yomi. And it turned out it was actually our daf that day. It was Sota Chaf Aleph. So he starts giving that, and Meir Shapiro was a great orator. He got really into it, and he got into the whole Yisachar Zvulun sugya thing, and as a result, it inspired this Sam Jonas. He said, "Who are you?" Like afterwards, he went over to him. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm, from this yeshiva," and he ended up raising lots of money for his yeshiva. Wow. That kind of was the turnaround that what really kicked off the success story of the yeshiva. Mm. And it was all because of Sota Daf Chaf Aleph.